Thank you very much, everybody. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Jena Tasmei Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupaha Kadamajam Dadati Svapadantikam Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Peshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Granthraj Srimad Bhakta Mahapurana Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So today we're reading from the Srimad Bhaktam, Canto 11, Chapter 18, which is entitled Description of Varnashrama Dharma, Text Number 19. Bahi jalashayam gatva Bahi jalashayam gatva Tatropas prishyavagyataha Tatropas prishyavagyataha Vibhajya pavitam shesha Vibhajya pavitam shesha Bunjita shesham ahritam Bunjita shesham ahritam Bahi jalashayam gatva Tatropas prishyavagyataha Vibhajya pavitang sheshang Bunjita sheshang ahrita Bahi jalashayam gatva Tatro praspishya vagyataha Vibhajya pavitam shesham Bunjita shesham ahritam Bahi jalashayam gatva Tatro paspriśya vāgyataha Vibhajya pāvitam śeṣāṁ Bhunjita śeṣam āhritam Bāhe jalāśayam gatvā You want to try these glasses? Tatro paspriśyam āhritam Vibhajya Pavitam Shesham Bunjita Sheshamahrita. Bahi Jalashayam Gatva. Tatro Pashpishya Vagyatah. Vibhajya Pavitam Shesham. Bunjita Sheshamarita. Good, very good. Bahe Jalashayam Gatva. Patro Pasprishya Vagyataha. Vibhajya Pavitam Shesham. Bunjita Shesham Ahritam. Madhijis. Bahe Jalashayam Gatva. Tatro Pasprishya Vagyataha. Vibhajya Pavitam Shesham. Bunjita Shesham Ahritam. Okay. Bahi. Outside of urban areas. In a secluded place. Jala. Of water. Ashayam. To a reservoir. Gatva, going, tatra, there, upasprishya, being purified by contact with water, vak yataha, without speaking, vibhajya, duly distributing, pavitam, purified, sesham, remnants, bhunjita, one should eat, asesham, completely, ahritam, gathered by begging. Translation, please repeat after me. Taking the food gathered through begging, one should leave the populated areas and go to a reservoir of water in a secluded place. There, having taken a bath and washed one's hands thoroughly, one should distribute portions of the food to others who may request it. One should do this without speaking. Then, having thoroughly cleansed the remnants, one should eat everything on one's plate, leaving nothing for future consumption. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that a saintly person should not argue or quarrel with materialistic persons who may request or demand part of his foodstuff. The word vibhajya indicates that one should give something to such persons to avoid disturbance, and then, offering the remnants to Lord Vishnu, one should eat everything on one's plate without saving food for the future. The word bahi indicates that one should not eat in a public place. And vagyataha indicates that one should eat silently, meditating upon the Lord's mercy. Om jnana te me randhasya jnana jana shalaka chakshuram nitam yena tasme shri guruve namaha. Nama om Vishnu padaya Krishna prishthaya bhutale shimate kamal Krishna goswami nam. So this is actually a very wonderful part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in many ways, Krishna, whilst telling us directly how we should behave, knows full well that our behavior hardly ever reaches the mark. You know, I mean, how many of us, first of all, before we eat, we beg the food before we eat it. You know, we beg for it. Hardly any of us do that, right? We either cook it ourselves or eat some food that's been cooked by somebody else. And then how many of us make sure that we don't eat publicly, that we eat in a secluded place? Again, doesn't happen. And then how many of us will leave a populated area? You know, it's like leaving Dallas, right? If you want to eat, you have to leave Dallas, where Dallas is a populated area. You're not supposed to eat in a populated area. And then how many of us go to a big reservoir of water? I mean, the big reservoir of water is right here in our populated area. To go to that reservoir of water that is not in a populated area, and then to eat, and then even before you eat, make sure that the others who are there get some of the food that you have begged, which apparently you're supposed to have begged from no more than 7 places. And that too, bearing in mind the different ashramas, the different varnashramas, so begging some food from the Brahmins, some from the Kshatriyas, some from the Vaishyas, and some from the Shudras, like that. Making sure everybody is contributing like that. I mean, this is not so easy to do in Kali Yuga. And then making sure that, you know, we're so purified, so cleansed ourselves, and purify the food before we partake of it, and make sure that we leave nothing, so that in the future we'll have to again do the same exercise. Every time we eat, we have to carry out the same exercise. So what is the grand scheme here? What is the grand scheme of all of this? The grand scheme is that Krishna wants us to understand that this is not a world of enjoyment. The purpose of life is not to enjoy this world. Just like for a prisoner who has gone to a prison house, a jail, his or her purpose is not to enjoy in that environment. That environment is met as a, in the case of a jail, a correctional facility. In our case, the material world has been given as an opportunity to serve in a mood of separation. So, for this mood of separation, how do we serve food? What is our process of serving food? And because these are not matters that can be understood by the senses, by the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego, Krishna manifests himself as Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Thank you. Just so that we may actually understand the process properly, and not just understand the process properly, but actually follow a process that is most elevated. Why? Because we are Krishna's children. Ultimately, we have all been manifested by Sri Krishna. He says that we are his parts and parcels, right? What is that verse in Bhagavad Gita? Mamevamsho jiva loka jiva bhuta sanatana, right? So that we are his parts and parcels. And so he wants each and every one of us, just like when a person is first class, then everything about them, they're first class, right? Their face is first class, their hands are first class. Everything. You don't say that the person is first class, but their little finger on their right hand is not first class. Everything is first class about them. So Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we are his parts and parcels. He wants that every one of his parts and parcels be just as good as he is, and have the same reputation of being just as good as he is. So how do we deal with food was explained very nicely by Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he came and performed his pastimes in Navadvipa. And he performed this pastime of distributing these wonderful mangoes from the mango tree, right? And he described it as distribution of the food of love of God. This is the food of love of God, right? That this is our our process. Our process is to deal with love of God. Everything we do here is ultimately meant for Krishna Prema, like we say in Mangalarti, right? That the ultimate purpose is Krishna Prema, everybody shouts loudly, Krishna Prema. So in this process of following Krishna Prema, Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 9, which chapter actually describes the desire tree of devotional service. Because this is the tree that will bear the fruit. The fruits that we will be eating, the food that we'll be eating comes from this tree, the desire tree of devotional service. And we can see that here the food is the desire tree of material desires. You know, the material tree, you know, that tree that's described in chapter 15 of the Bhagavad Gita as having its branches downwards and its roots upwards, right? Because it's a reflection. And therefore the roots look like they're going up and the branches look like they're going down, right? So it's just the opposite type of tree. That is the tree everybody's trying to enjoy, but Lord Krishna Chaitanya wanted us to enjoy this other tree, which is the desire tree of devotional service. And there, he describes, it is described that describes here, starting from verse 7. I'm just going to read the translation so that, you know, we can speak about this. Lord Chaitanya thought, my name is Vishvambara, one who maintains the entire universe. That's what Vishvambara means. Its meaning will be actualized if I can fill the whole universe with love of Godhead. Love of Godhead. Thinking in this way, he accepted the duty of a planter and began to grow a garden in Navadvipa. Thus the Lord brought the desire tree of devotional service to this earth and became its gardener. He sowed the seed and sprinkled upon it the water of his will. All glories, Sri Madhavendra Puri, the storehouse of all devotional service unto Krishna. He is a desire tree of devotional service, and it is to him, and it is in him that the seed of devotional service first fructified. The seed of devotional service next fructified in the form of Sri Ishwarapuri. And then the gardener himself, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, became the main trunk of the tree of devotional service. By his inconceivable powers, the Lord became the gardener, the trunk, and the branches simultaneously. This is the Lord describing the same thing that we spoke about from the Bhagavad Gita. Mamai Vamsha, Jiva Loka, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauranga Mahaprabhu, is himself simultaneously, it is described, the trunk and the branches. Right? Because a tree has a trunk and it has branches, right? Like that. And so, and then it's described, Paramananda Puri, Keshava Bharati, Brahmananda Puri, and Brahmananda Bharati, Sri Vishnupuri, Keshava Puri, Krishnananda Puri, Sri Nrasingha Tirtha, and Sukhananda Puri, these 9 sannyasi roots all sprouted from the trunk of the tree. These are considered roots, but they sprouted from the trunk of the tree. And you can see sometimes the tree looks like that, right? When a branch comes out, the little branches that come off it look like they're actually like roots coming off a branch, right? Thus the tree stood steadfastly on the strength of these 9 roots. With the sober and grave Paramananda Puri as the central root, and the other 8 roots in the 8 directions, the tree of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stood firmly. Right? Okay. Because going up is one direction, going down is another direction, then the 8 directions makes the 10 directions. Okay, then it's described, from the trunk grew many branches, and above them, innumerable others. So there are many, many branches that grew. Thus, the branches of the Chaitanya tree formed a cluster of or society with great branches covering all the universe. From each branch grew many hundreds of sub-branches. No one can count how many branches thus grew. So each person who becomes a disciple of these, you might say, very elevated personalities, right, is also a sub-branch, right? And then it's described, I shall try to name the foremost of the innumerable branches. Please hear the description of the Chaitanya tree. At the top of the tree, the trunk branched into two. One trunk was named Sri Advaita Prabhu and the other Sri Nityananda Prabhu. From these two trunks grew many branches and sub-branches that covered the entire world. Means all of the devotees in the Hare Krishna movement were already in that tree that Lord Chaitanya planted. Right? They're only manifesting now and into the future for the next 10,000 years. All the devotees who will manifest are actually the branches of that tree. Because it covers the whole universe. Right? Prithivityati yathanagaradi gram sarvatra prachara huibhya moranam. So these branches are going to cover the, not just planet Earth. Remember, Srila Prabhupada did say that ISKCON will deliver the three worlds. Means ISKCON will deliver the entire universe. So this tree is going to grow to other planets as well, and there'll be devotees manifested on those planets from devotees from this planet, where these planet devotees will go to other planets. And right now, of course, the materialists are trying to figure out how to go to the other planets, but the devotees will figure out faster than they will. Because you don't need a rocket or a spaceship to go to another planet. You can manifest in another planet by mantra. So the devotees are going to learn these mantras. And they'll know how to chant the mantra and appear in a different planet. And then start the movement in that planet. Just like Prabhupada would, when the train would stop, would tell the devotees, now you get off here and you're going to preach in this city. And you start the movement in this city, right? And a devotee would get off and he would start the movement in that city, right? So you can see the little examples of what's going to happen in the future in Srila Prabhupada's own pastimes. It's really wonderful how wonderful this thing is going on. Then it's described, these branches and sub-branches and their sub-branches, so, right, guru, disciple, grand disciple, great-grand disciple, like that, acharya, like that, right, became so numerous that no one can actually write about them. How can you, right? There are billions and billions of branches, because they're going to be billions and billions of devotees. Actually, they're going to be trillions of devotees, quadrillions of devotees of ISKCON, spreading this movement all over this creation, right? This universe.
And it started here?
It started in New York. How wonderful is that, right? How wonderful it is. No one would imagine New York would have been the root place from which the entire creation would be nourished. You know? It's amazing. It's just amazing. As a big fig tree bears fruits all over its body, each part of the tree of devotional service bore fruit. Now, what is the fruit here? What is the fruit? The fruit is obviously fruit of love of God, right? But what is the fruit? What form does this fruit take? What form does this prasadam take? Because we're talking about prasadam here, right? How to beg for prasadam, then how to distribute the prasadam, then how to oneself honor the prasadam, and how to honor it in such a way that you go back to the process all over again and beg it again and, you know, distribute it again and honor it again and beg it again, and right? So it's a continual process like the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, right? You're always first chanting. Prabhupada said there are two mantras that he asked us to chant in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jayati Jayati Namananda Rupam Murari Viramita Nijadharma Dhyan Pujadi Yatnam Katham Api Sakridatna Muktidam Praninam Yat Paramam Amritam Ekam Jeevanam Bhushanam. Like, there are two mantras like that, one by Rupa Goswami and one by Sanatana Goswami. Rupa Goswami is Nam Nam Akari. No. The first one is Jeti Jeti Namam Rupam Murari Viramita Nijadharma Dhyan Pujadi Yatnam Katham Api Sakridatta Muktidam Praninam Yat Paramam Amtamekam Jeevanam Bhushanam. Nikhila Shutti Moli, the next one is Nikhila Shutti Moli Ratnamala Duty Nirajit Pad Pankajanta Yamukta Kalera Pasyamanam Paritas Twam Harinama Samshayami. So basically, before you chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you should beg it. Now we first beg it from our spiritual master, and then the spiritual master awards us the holy name, right? But before we chant every day, we should be in the mood of a beggar, that we beg the name again. And these two mantras were given by Prabhupada in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that actually written by Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami, who are the two principal Goswamis who actually give us the science of Krishna consciousness. So they, each of them wrote one mantra. And so we beg the mantra by chanting these two. And then we chant the mantra, and then we distribute this mantra to others in the form of a Harinam Sankirtan, right? That's the purpose of Harinam Sankirtan. And then every day we do the same thing. We do this repeatedly. And so what is the fruit? We're going to talk about the fruit. Since Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the original trunk, the taste of the fruits that grew on the branches and sub-branches surpassed the taste of nectar. The fruits ripened and became sweet and nectarian. The gardener, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, distributed them without asking any price. All the wealth in the three worlds cannot equal the value of one such nectarian fruit of devotional service. Now, this is a very key statement that is being made. Now, what happens when there's a fruit? When a fruit comes, right? And we eat the fruit. And what's inside the fruit? The seed, right? There's a seed inside. And what do we do with the seed? We plant the seed, right? And what happens after that? A tree grows. So actually what is being described is that every devotee is actually the fruit of love of God. And it is our purpose to somehow or the other touch others so that they will also become the fruit of love of God. And then it's described in this verse that if it's described that all the wealth in the three worlds, meaning if you take the total value of creation, it still does not equal the value of any one devotee, any one follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who is on that tree. Any one follower like that. So really, the nectarian fruit or the nectarian prasadam that we are meant to distribute is the prasadam of devotees. We're supposed to actually, somehow or the other, touch other people so that they will become happy to come to know Gauranga Mahaprabhu and come to chant his holy names, chant the holy names of Krishna. Prithivitiyache thanagaradigram sarvatra pacharhuibe moranam jarita kitari kaha Krishna upadesh amara gyai guru hanatare desh. That then what they will do? They will, after they learn this, after they read Srila Prabhupada's books and they chant Hare Krishna, which are two of the four major principal activities that a devotee must perform. The four activities that a devotee must perform to become a sincere devotee is to, the first duty is the duty of compassion. The devotee should understand that everybody in this world is suffering, and that we should actually be compassionate towards each and every living entity so that they will become happy. They're miserable right now, and we want them to become happy. The second duty that we have is the duty of tolerance. We must learn tolerance. We must learn to tolerate more and more and more. The more we're able to tolerate, the more we will be able to serve Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Now we can see in Srila Prabhupada's personal example, right, his tolerance. Right? He was such an advanced devotee. And yet, when he first came to America, he said he had to put his food in a refrigerator next to the meat that was in the refrigerator, right? And he didn't complain. The lady who looked after him, Mrs. Agarwal, describes that Prabhupada was such a perfect gentleman. It was a pure pleasure for her, for me, she says, to host him in my house. I was honored to meet him. And Prabhupada had nothing, right, to offer anybody at the time. I mean, materially speaking, he was, you might say, like a beggar, right? I mean, imagine a beggar comes to your house and the beggar stays in your house, right? And you feel like, I'm so honored to meet you, sir. You're such a wonderful person. You're a first-class person. I've never met anybody like you. You give me so much happiness. Right? So such a first-class personality. And yet, the people he first met, well, obviously he was in America, in New York. And, you know, that's not obviously the topmost culture on the planet when it comes to, worldly sensibilities, right? He really met people who were rough people, you know, they're like, you know, tough people, right? Prabhupada actually said, you know, that Americans are very cruel by nature. It's very cruel. We only understand that cruelty when you compare it to Krishna consciousness. When you compare it to what happens in this material world, Americans are actually nice people. You know, they're very generous. They're big-hearted people, right? And they're very compassionate towards other people. You know, America is the country that gives pretty much the most to all the other countries in the world in terms of, you know, material support, this, that, and the other, right? So, but this is comparison with Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was very Krishna conscious. So he could see the cruelty was that the American lifestyle was that it takes you away from God. It takes you towards Maya, you know? It sort of makes you really drown in the ocean of Maya. And you feel like, I am the Lord myself, you know? You have the last name of Maya, right? They say, I am the Lord myself. I am God. I can do anything, you know? Amar, I can, right? Amar, you can is Amar, I can. Amar, Amar means forever. I can. Amar, I can. So, Prabhupada saw that that's actually cruelty because it's taking you away into the lap of the witch Maya. So, tolerance is extremely important. We can see in his life how very tolerant he was. The devotees describe how early in the early days, they really didn't know Srila Prabhupada's stature. So when they would form a queue to go into the shower, Prabhupada would stand in line, right? He'd come and join the line. So if there were 5-6 devotees in front of him, he's the 7th person to take a shower. Right? I mean, what tolerance, right? And no complaint. Wasn't even like they got an inkling from him that there was something was amiss. It was just normal. Right? He was very tolerant. And our situation is we're not very tolerant. If we find something a little amiss, it's like we get disturbed, you know? And then we do something about it and create even more disturbance in the process. So this is something we have to learn, that these two principles are very important of compassion and tolerance. And then the third principle is the principle that whenever we chant, we should chant attentively. We should chant understanding that I am associating with Krishna directly here. And how attentive I would be if Krishna was standing in front of me, right? If Lord Krishna came and manifested right here in this room, we would all be stunned. Beyond measure, we'd be stunned, right? Our hair would be standing on end like porcupine, you know, for those of us who got a little longer hair. It'd be standing up like porcupine quills, you know? Because that's just Krishna. He's such an amazing personality. So when we're chanting, are we chanting with that type of, you know, sincerity, with that type of feeling, emotion? Like a baby that is really crying for its mother, you know. It's genuinely calling out to its mother. Are we calling out Krishna's name with that type of emotion, that type of feeling, that type of love, which is the best of all emotions and feelings? Then the fourth is that we should, Prabhupada says, read his books scrutinizingly. What does it mean to read scrutinizingly? It means that we should be able to see ourselves just like we're sitting here and we're talking. We can see ourselves, we can see the deities, we're in the scene, right? We're in the scene. So when we read, are we in the scene that we're reading about? Can we visualize ourselves? I was just talking to a devotee yesterday and she was telling me that she'd gone to your class, Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, on Bhagavad Gita, and you were, on Mondays you do a class or something, you do a reading program or? Yeah, so there was a Monday one that she had come to. She comes to both. But she on this Monday one, particular Monday one, you were talking about this tree that had a reflection Yeah. And she said, immediately I visualized the tree, and I was right there in the tree. I could see the tree, you know. And I was thinking to myself, she's a new devotee. I think to myself, this is scrutinizing reading. You know, obviously you had that mood, and she caught the mood, you know. And so she's right there in the scene. How many of us are really there in the scene when we're reading? Or how many of us are thinking, I need to get past these many pages today. That's my quota. You know what I mean? Is that how we're reading? But that's not really reading. It is good to do that, by the way, compared to not doing it. It's far better. But really, the purpose is to read scrutinizingly, right? So these four things are there. And so, the four is, first is compassion for others, compassion for others. Two is tolerant, being very tolerant. The third is chanting attentively. And the fourth is reading scrutinizingly. These four, Srila Prabhupada describes, are the four essential activities of a devotee that will turn a devotee from whatever they might be to a very advanced Krishna conscious person. You can see this is all personal, right? It doesn't depend on anybody else, it depends on me. Which means nobody else can stop me. Only I can stop myself. You see? Because these four activities are intensely personal. And so what does this create? Then we become the fruit of love of Godhead. When we do these four things, we're the fruit that people will taste and they will enjoy. Right? Think about it now. When you eat prasadam, right? We take prasadam. How long does that prasadam give us, you know, bliss for? Maybe a few hours, right? Then you forget about it, right?
I was thinking 15 minutes.
15 minutes maybe, yeah. For some, yeah, mostly it's not very much. But in the case of a person, when you meet a really nice person, right? How long do you get the bliss from that person that you met? It's amazing, right? It's not just this lifetime. It's future lifetimes too. There's actually a saying amongst Indians, you know, that maybe be married for 7 lifetimes. I mean, it's not a very nice saying, personally. I don't like the saying too much myself. Because I think even in one lifetime, marriage is really tough, you know. Why would I want to multiply it for 7 lifetimes? You know. One lifetime is hard enough. I mean, no. Yeah, no matter how much wonderful wife you have, I mean, you know. You soon realize when you're married that neither the husband nor the wife is very relishable, you know. It's like Prabhupada said, you know, man is good, woman is good, together they're bad, you know. So, both the wife is not very much enjoying the husband, the wife's not very much. They're tolerating one another, and yeah, there is some little enjoyment, and especially if you're really ignorant, then you might feel some enjoyment in that ignorance. But it's not enjoyment, it's just the amount of misery, the level of misery just comes down a little, and you feel like that's enjoyment, you know, but it's still misery. It's like Prabhupada quotes this verse, right? Dili ka laddu jo khaya wo pastaya, jo nahi khaya wo pastaya. Meaning, there's this laddu in Delhi that has so much ghee in it, you know, so much fat in it, you know, that those who eat it, they regret eating it, you know. Sorry.
Those who eat it regret eating it.
And those who don't eat it wonder what it tastes like, you know. So marriage is like that, right? Those who are not married, they think, you know, I'm sure it'd be really nice to get married. I can see this person is married, that person is married, and look how happy they are. Because everybody puts up a brave face, right? And it looks like they're really happily married. I mean, you know, and I do a lot of marriage counseling. And often the wife or the husband, whichever one is aggrieved, will tell me, I see other couples and they're so happy. Why can't we be happy? I tell them, you know, whoever it is, whether it's the husband or the wife saying that, I say, you have no idea what you just said. You have no idea. Nobody is happy. This is Dukalaya. You know, how anybody's going to be happy? Well, you're supposed to be happy, but that's not how you become happy, you know. We are supposed to be happy. It's our nature to be happy. But there's a way to become happy, right? And the way to become happy is to associate with a devotee.
I tried everything, only Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. Only the association of devotees will give us happiness. Because in the association of devotees, we will learn those things that really make us happy. If you don't meet a devotee, whether in the form of a book or in the form of a person, because the book is also a devotee, you know, the book Bhagavata, right, or the person Bhagavata, we're not going to become happy. You see what I'm saying? So this is the real fruit that we're supposed to distribute. The fruit of the devotees who are the personification of love of God. And we notice that. How many times do we say, Maharaj, you should spend more time in Dallas? Because, you know, people love it when you come. They talk to you, they feel happy, right? We always meet some devotee that we feel like, this person, I'm so glad he came to Dallas. You know? And then we were able to associate for a while, and then we feel like, he gave me so much happiness. And that happiness continues even after the devotee leaves, right? That's the effect of love of God. It leaves a leaves a permanent imprint, right? Leaves a permanent imprint. So, I was sort of like, when I was reading this verse yesterday, because I was told that this is the verse I was going to speak on, as soon as this, I saw the way it had been written, you know, the plot that was there in the verse, it immediately reminded me that this is for us, this is our prasadam. You know, this is what we actually enjoy doing. And I wanted to say this because I noticed this when I first met younger devotees, you know, because at one time we were younger ourselves and then, you know, we got married and then we grew up. Actually, I wasn't that young when I joined. I was 30 years of age, which, you know, in Hare Krishna speak is really old, you know. That's an old age to start. Hopefully you start from birth, but at least you start when you become a teen, you know, a teenager is when you first come to know, right? Like, you were a teenager, weren't you, when you joined I was talking to Mr. Bhagavan Prabhu. What was your age when you joined? Yeah. 24-year-old grand old man, exactly. So 30 years is way beyond old, you know. I was 30 when I started, as in Hare Krishna, I mean, I was 30 when I started. So anyway, point is that, you know, but then, you know, you got married, I was married already, and then, you know, you grew up, children, and then when I came to Dallas, and, you know, in Dallas, I met, it wasn't earlier on when I first came to Dallas, the temple didn't have many devotees in it. There are very few devotees in this temple, actually. Just a few devotees, actually a handful. You can count them on your fingers, you know, like that. And but then I would say when I came back again in 2000, maybe 2001, around 2001, I started noticing the younger devotees growing up, the ones who were the babies growing up and becoming like the youth, Hare Krishna, becoming the youth. And one thing I noticed about them was, you know, in my generation, like when the program was over, everybody would rush to make a beeline for the prasadam, you know? It would be like, prasadam time, you know, it's like empty, temple, empty, you know what I mean? It's like everybody's out there to take prasadam, you know? But these younger devotees, they would sit in the temple and they would continue doing kirtan, even though prasadam was being served out there, you know? And I thought to myself, how wonderful this is. They have a taste for the holy name. And, you know they're going to get their prasadam. They're okay. They're young, right? You really don't need food all the time. It's more like have fun, you know? Let's have a good time. And, you know, when you're doing kirtan, you're really enjoying it, right? It's a nice kirtan. You're singing nicely, singing and dancing. So it's very relishable, you know, like that. And so for them, that was their prasadam. You know, it was like, that was just like the prasadam for them. And that is the real prasadam, you know, if you think about it. The greatest food that we have in Hare Krishna is love of God. It's the fruit of love of God, which Lord Chaitanya wanted to distribute, right? This whole story is about Lord Chaitanya distributing this fruit of love of God, and that all of these fruits are like branches and sub-branches and sub-branches of sub-branches, and the whole universe is covered by these quadrillions and quadrillions of branches who are, each and every one of them is a devotee. And that devotee is going to sprout branches, because that devotee is going to preach and someone is going to take to Krishna consciousness as a result of that devotee. Right? They don't have to be. You can see in the quadrillions and quadrillions and quadrillions of branches, are all of them Diksha gurus? Are all of them Diksha gurus? No. No. They're all Siksha gurus. They're all Siksha gurus. You know? Diksha guru is there to admit us into the lineage, but Siksha guru is the one who's going to walk you back to Godhead. He's the one who's going to, or she's the one who's going to hold your hand and walk you back to Godhead. And Prabhupada did say, I want 2 million gurus, he said, both men and women. He actually said that. He wanted 2 million gurus, both men and women. And for a long time, people were questioning, what does that mean? Are there going to be 2 million Diksha gurus? You know, like that. But Prabhupada, Diksha gurus. Diksha means, initiating spiritual masters. Prabhupada didn't mean that. He meant Siksha gurus. 2 million Siksha gurus, both men and women. Because women can be Siksha gurus, right? But the question may arise, can they be Diksha gurus? That's a controversial issue. But at least let's agree that they can be Siksha gurus. I don't think there's any disagreement on that issue. There's a unanimous feeling that any person can preach. Any person can reach out to another person and help them become a devotee, serve them so they will become a nice devotee, like that. And these branches are all there, these branches, what it means to have quadrillions and quadrillions of branches like that, covering the whole universe, which is the tree that Lord Chaitanya actually started. That is his tree, you see what I'm saying? And the ISKCON movement is a very, very major part of that tree that Lord Chaitanya actually planted. Hare Krishna. I'm going to stop here and ask if you'd like to say something or ask a question. Mr. Bhagavan.
I don't usually like to try to bring management issues into class, but since you're talking about the prasadam, the special quality of Krishna prasadam, in our prasadam hall, the restaurant managers had decided to cut off all plates and cups.
Mm.
They feel like people should bring their own, and maybe they should.
Yeah.
But a big result of that is that people can't eat prasadam. So a lot of times since then, we've had to throw away almost entire offerings of Mahaprasadam in the trash can. Just, a very special process to offer it and put on, offer it to Krishna,
right,
and
right.
Put in these containers, and then goes out in Prasadam Hall and it's no plates, so sits there for a few hours, and then it transfers on to into the restaurant, and the guy washing pots just nonchalantly throws it in the trash, and the business goes on. So I'm wondering, I know that Mahaprasadam is supposed to be really special, like you were saying. I've heard that a little bit of it caused a big commotion with Narada Muni and Lakshmi over just a little drop. And we're taking entire offerings, or almost an entire offering, Sabzi Rice Dal, sweets, and just plop into the garbage, and nobody's thinking anything about it.
Yeah.
I'm worried about is, can that give us what kind of reaction can come from that? Could we all... Is it collective-like, or is it just...
Yeah, it's collective. Right? It's collective. I think we should look at it from both angles. One angle is, what opportunity does that present for those of us who have an opportunity to serve, right? There is an opportunity to, get some plates like, Rasaraj Prabhu has these wonderful plates that he actually imports and distributes. We can actually buy the plates from him and make sure that we put the plates there and the cups there and everything ourselves, right? One thing that, we learned from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there was one program, it was a big pandal program, and in that pandal program, there were 20,000 people sitting in the field to listen to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur give a discourse. Yeah, so they had the mic. They had a mic like this. They had an amplification process. And so basically what happened was, the person who was supposed to set up the system, the amplification system, didn't turn up. Rock concerts have very many people. You haven't been to a rock concert lately. That's a lot of people, 20,000 people. Of course, India is a very big country, it's a very powerful, And he was a very famous speaker. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a very, very famous speaker. He mesmerized people when he spoke. You know, it's amazing. Just like Prabhupada, he mesmerized people when he spoke. So anyway, so what happened was that Thakur turned up and he saw that the mic had not been set up. So he called the temple president and he said to the temple president, "Where's the mic? Where's my mic? Where's the amplification system?" He said, "Maharaj," he said, "the devotee was, it was a devotee, just like here, you know, Rasaraj Prabhu helps with the system down here and, you know, like that." So didn't turn up. The rascal didn't turn up. You know, it's supposed to. Maharaj is, Thakur was such a powerful personality. I mean, everything was like clockwork with him, you know. Had to be done properly. It wasn't like, these days our mood's very relaxed compared to what it was then. I mean, may have been relaxed from their point of view, but really, things were well organized. So he got very angry at the temple president. He said, "He didn't come, but you came. You came to this program. Why don't you have a microphone? We don't. You don't have a microphone. It's not his fault. It's your fault. You were here. Why didn't you get the microphone or get the microphone arranged?" You know. So one thing we have to learn as devotees is that if somebody else doesn't do what they, but you hope that they will do, one can personally take responsibility and say, "I will try to help out. You know, I'll get some plates. I'll get some spoons. I'll get." So that's one thing. That's the opportunity, right? The other side is, yes, there's going to be reaction if you throw prasadam away, you know. Maybe Kalachandji did want the prasadam to be eaten by those living entities who actually ended up eating the prasadam, because that prasadam does get eaten up. Maybe they're going to become devotees in their next life, and that's the, you know, the accidental, not our purpose. It's not like we want to make devotees, because if we're really good preachers, we wouldn't have that type of a mood that will let prasadam be thrown away, right? But even then, Kalachandji is so kind, you know, he'll think, yeah, my devotees are not very intelligent, you know, they're not very good devotees, maybe, but they're my devotees, you know. It's just like Srila Prabhupada, when sometimes some more elevated people in society would come and complain, you know, your disciples are not very, very cultured, you know. They don't have very good culture. I remember this one story in Mumbai where this businessman, he saw that the devotees were all sleeping on the floor. So he decided he'll buy them all a mattress. He's very wealthy. So he decided, "I'll buy all the devotees a mattress so they can sleep on a mattress, you know, with a nice cover and pillow and everything, blanket, full set," right? He bought the whole thing for every one of the devotees in the temple in Mumbai. And then he found out a month later, there were hardly any mattresses left, hardly any pillows left there, and they were sleeping on the ground. The devotees were sleeping on the ground. So he thought, "What happened? I gave you all these guys, these blankets and everything. How come?" Well, that devotee went to the other place and he took his mattress with him and he took his blanket with him and took his pillow with him. And so they ended up again with hardly any, you know. So he became very irate. You don't do things like that. It's not your blanket. It's not your pillow. It belongs to the temple. You're not supposed to just walk away with it. Even today we see that happening. Sometimes devotees walk away with what belongs to the temple, thinking, "I'm a devotee. I'm entitled to take it away." They may be even wealthy, but they'll still take it away, thinking, "I'm a devotee of the temple. It's all right. I can walk away with it. I'll bring it back." And do they bring it back? You know, I remember when I first came here, we were much poorer than we are now. I mean, when it comes to resources, okay? So the plates that we had and everything that we had, we really needed them, you know? And devotees would walk away and they'd take them to their home, right? And they wouldn't bring it back. And so what we would do once in a while is to go all the devotees' homes and pick up all the ware again and bring them back to the temple, you know? I'm sure if I walk through every house of the devotees down here, I'll find a lot of temple paraphernalia sitting inside devotees' houses. We don't do that. We don't embarrass them anymore like that. But one time, you know, it was like that, right? You didn't mind embarrassing anybody because it was the necessity of the day.
Where else in town can you go and walk in and just keep
the word? Yeah. Like that. So the point is that we actually, you know, have an opportunity to actually serve, right? So we find the best way we can serve and whatever is happening. And yes, you know, it could be that, you know, there are many reasons why the decision might have been made. And, you know, that can be brought up at the temple council to discuss what those reasons are. And somebody may stand by their reasons because they feel those are good reasons, right, to do whatever they did. But for the rest of us who feel like, you know, there's a better way to do this, we have the opportunity to do some service. You know, we can actually take it upon ourselves to encourage, like even there's so many people who come to this temple who'd love to do service like this. They'd love to give a few plates to the devotees so they can eat in a plate. You know, they'll even buy them, I think, the more, what do you call it, durable plates, right? These are, of course, throwaways. What we're using are, what do you call them, disposables. They wouldn't even mind. Of course, but if you put a durable plate there, I guarantee you that durable plate will not be durable for very long. You know? It'll become disposable. You know what I mean? It'll be in somebody's house, piled up in somebody's house, all the durable plates. But anyway, we can do those things. So we should do those things. Because, and then the other thing that we do is, there's a very wonderful devotee who would come to this temple at one time when I first came here, younger devotee. His name is Ram Mohan. What is his name now? Ram Vilas. We all know him. He's now in Pune, right? If I'm not wrong, he's in Pune right now. Right, nice to be Ram Mohan. So what he would do is, if he found that there was any food there, he'd pack it all up. He'll pack it up and then he'll go and distribute it out there. And there were some places that he took it, including, I think, the place he worked. They became so accustomed to getting the prasadam, when he didn't bring it, he would ask him, "Where's our prasadam for today? We love this stuff. Why didn't you get us some prasadam today?" And you say, "Well, they ran out. There's no prasadam left. Sorry," you know. Which also happens, right? The opposite also happens. There are times when there's not enough prasadam there. I mean, you know, some devotees, they can see they're scraping the bottom. Hardly anything left for them to eat, right? Like that. So it happens. These things happen. But anyway, whatever happens, we keep our good mood of Krishna consciousness. We're happy to be Krishna conscious. We stay happy and we stay encouraged and stay enthused because that mood rubs off on others, right? It's not a big deal if I didn't get to eat on a particular day. I can tell you the situation is a lot better now. When I came in 1993, there were times we had our meal the next day. There was no meal the whole day. Nothing to eat. Because there was only very little prasadam that was made for the altar. Because there was very little money. So very little food was made. It was put there. If you didn't get there the first 5 minutes, that's it. 5 minutes is all it took. Thing was gone. You know what I mean? And you were not allowed in the restaurant. Not allowed to go into the restaurant and eat or anything like that. There were very strict rules at that time. And I, you know, Yudhisthira Prabhu was very, very, very good manager, you know. Very good manager. He, very strict manager.
Can we at least keep leaving the gates open for class because it's so nice to have the gates open for class?
Yeah, but then the pujari has to go, so who's going to close the plate off? So that's why they have to close. So they keep it open until they can. And anyway, what I wanted to say, the essence of what I'm saying is that no matter what happens, we stay enthused. There are circumstances that are causing. The most important reason why we're suffering in this world is because I decided to come to this material world to enjoy it. You know? So really, that is the most important reason we have any problem on the planet. It's actually me. It's not somebody else, right? And then the second thing is that Krishna sees so much love in us when he can see that in these difficult circumstances, we're continuing to be devotees. Prabhupada said, "Be surprised who stays, not who leaves." You know? We're not surprised that people leave this movement. I mean, you know, this movement gives you 1 million plus reasons why you have to leave the movement. So if you stay, and all of them are correct, absolutely correct reasons. And if you stay, then Krishna thinks, "Wow, look at this devotee, man. I'm shaking the tree up big time." By the way, who's doing that? It is Krishna, okay? You might say it's the devotees who are doing that, it's the managers. No manager can do anything. Manager can't even breathe if Krishna didn't say, "Breathe." No manager can do anything. Some managers think they're very big, they're very smart, they're great managers. They're going to learn in their next life that they weren't great managers. You know, they could have gone back to Godhead, but their false ego kept them back on this planet because they're so great. You know what I mean? So Krishna said, "Yeah, you are great. Stay back. Let's do some more great service." You know?
The first quality of a devotee is humility, right? Compassion, sometimes they say, but humility is the crown jewel of a devotee. So the fact remains that no matter what happens, we're going to remain devotee. Prabhupada even said that. Even if you're the last devotee on the planet, he said, you know, you do your service. Your service is, you do everything in the temple then. Remember, imagine this temple was so bad that every devotee left. And you were the last devotee standing in this temple. You make sure you do the deity worship. You cook the food, do the deity worship, do Mangal Arati, clean the temple, preach to everybody, repopulate the temple. That's your service. Wouldn't that be wonderful service? We have our work cut out. Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Seeing you after a very long time. Nice to see you again. So this is our opportunity, right? At the same time, you're right. Prasadam should not be thrown, and you get reactions. We are getting reactions. Look at the reactions we're getting. There are reactions, right? All of us are getting reactions. Nobody can say, you know, my life is super fantastic or anything like that. Nothing near it, right? We're all getting reactions. Which actually reminds me, you know, the situation in Puerto Rico, you know, where this terrible, terrible Irma, I think they call it Irma, right? Oh no, wasn't the other, it was the other one. What came after Irma? Starts with an M. Maria? Maria, yeah, Maria is the one that called, wreaked havoc. And our devotees are taking the deities from one place to another just to try and shelter the deities. And they're really struggling down there, you know. So I was thinking that the Dallas devotees should get together and raise some funds. And just the temple can then send that money to their temple account in Puerto Rico. Because they really need help. It's really bad. None of the places like Houston or Florida suffered as much as what Puerto Rico suffered. It's really terrible what's happening out there. And now we're hearing the devotees are really suffering. They're really suffering. So if we can help those devotees, really, it would be very nice in some form or another. And we are very fortunate. The treasurer of the devotees is with us right now at this temple. That's Mother Adira. She's the treasurer of the Puerto Rico temple. Yeah. So, which is nice. She can tell us that she got the money and that is used nicely and things like that, you know. But the temple can send the money out because that way everybody can get a tax deduction for whatever they gave to the temple for this purpose. Market for Puerto Rico and whatever we can do, little or more that we can do. I think, you know, we'll announce it tomorrow at the Sunday feast. And I'm going to send a message out to the North American leaders and ask all North American devotees, you know, to try and do something. And actually, internationally, devotees can do something. There is no service greater than serving a devotee. No service. It's the topmost service because each of these devotees is the fruit of love of God. You know, and here it is said, right? We read, if you take the value of the total creation, all the wealth of the three worlds and put it together, it still doesn't equal the value of one devotee. Like that. And how many devotees there are who are struggling right now there? You can do something for them. That'll be really great. Just remember that. I thought I'd just say that. Any other points? Yes, bro. Can you give him the mic, bro? The mic at the back. Yeah. No, get hold of the mic just so that people can hear the microphone. Mike, grab the mic.
I know that the way I came to Krishna consciousness is I got a Krishna book and a Bhagavad Gita by trading a bag of pot. And
a bag
I was
of pot.
Sitting, okay. Yeah, I traded a bag of pot and I got those two books from a friend. I used to go to his house and my wife and I would just sit there, and the whole time we were there, we would just sit there with the, and look at the pictures. And we just were amazed at these books. And so then we found out who these Hare Krishna people were. We had no idea.
Right, right.
So I'm just pointing out that what you're saying is so true. In one book, you don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Book distribution is so important. Getting those books out, getting the word out there in any form, shape, or form you can is very, very important. You know, it's about proliferation of knowledge. If you proliferate this information, you know, no matter what form that proliferation takes, whether in the form of a book, or in the form of an email, the form of a post on your Facebook page, or blog, or whatever it might be, you will be doing the world a very great turn. People will take to this process and people will actually do things in the future. And the Lord will allow more things to happen. I personally think that the only reason Hare Krishna doesn't do well is because of our preaching mood. Our preaching mood is not as strong as it used to be. We need to revive our preaching mood and become preachers, you know. And everything else will fall into place automatically when the preaching happens.
We used to go out all day, every day,
right,
except for Sunday, which we would prepare for the feast, yeah, with a book bag.
Right.
And that's how we supported the temple.
That's right. It's very true. Very true. Other points anybody would like to make? Ashraj, you want to say something? No? All right. So are we ready for prasadam?
Jai.
Yes. Very good. Vanchakapaturvescha kripasandhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah anantakoti vaishnavavrindaki jai
srimad
bhagavatam mahapurana ki jai srila prabhupada ki jai shri radha kalachandji ki jai shri gaura bhaktavrinda ki jai nitai gaur bhimanandi hari hari
his grace nityananda prabhu ki jai. We are so fortunate to have your manager.